All right, let's get started. So we've got lots of time for lots of questions at the end, hopefully. So my name's Amanda Aitken. I'm from Actuarial Edge, and I'll chair this session. If you're interested in hearing about the huge changes that have happened within the New South Wales schemes, and a little bit of information about what's happened within the National Workers Comcare scheme, then you're in the right place. If not, then I suggest you leave and find the session you'd like to go to. We've got 40 minutes, so Anthony and Sarah will each have about 15 minutes to get you up to date, and then that should give us lots of time for questions at the end. Just a reminder, if you haven't already done so, please turn your phone to silent, and also please remember to fill in your presenter feedback surveys at the end. So Anthony is up first. Anthony was appointed as the Deputy Secretary, Better Regulation and Chief Executive of New South Wales' new State Insurance Regulatory Authority from 1st of September this year. Anthony's previous roles in the department were as Deputy Secretary, Government Services, and Deputy Secretary, Policy and Executive Services, where he led whole-of-government reforms in ICT, procurement, government data centres and shared services transformation. Quite a bit of varied work in there. Prior to this, Anthony spent 7 years as the Executive Director of Legal Branch in the Cabinet Office and the Department of Premier and Cabinet before coming to the Department of Finance and Services as General Counsel in August 2009. So with significant high-level legal and policy experience within the New South Wales public sector, Anthony has also worked within other agencies, including New South Wales Health and the former New South Wales WorkCover Authority. Thanks very much, Anthony.
Thank you. So I'm going to give you a bit of an overview of the scheme, the changes that have been made in New South Wales over the last sort of 6 months, also some which happened last year as well, just to give you a bit of context and background to that. As the bio mentioned, I did actually work in WorkCover about 15 years ago. I think it was the time of the 2001 scheme reforms. And I think when I was there at that point, WorkCover managed to cause a riot around Parliament House. So I'm actually hoping we don't do that again this time while I'm here. So so in my new role as the DEPSEC Better Regulation, I've actually got responsibility for CIRA, or the State Insurance Regulatory Agency, which brings together the regulatory functions of the Motor Accidents Authority, home building, insurance regulation, and that's in the process of transitioning, but also, most importantly, workers' comp regulation. Andrew Nichols seems to be speaking. He looks after the motor accidents area. He's speaking about seven things at this event. So I'm not going to touch on motor accidents at all today. I'll just stick to the workers' comp side of things. But it's been a really eventful 6 months with the changes that have been made. In August 2015, the government, or Parliament, I should say, passed landmark reforms that actually completely changed the way workers' comp insurance is delivered in New South Wales. That package was a result of sort of extensive consultation. It responded to a number of inquiries that have been undertaken into the scheme, including one by the Centre for International Economics and one by the Law and Justice Committee of Parliament. If anyone knows anything about New South Wales, we get constantly reviewed by parliamentary committees in the workers' comp and motor accident space, but we welcome the review and oversight, I should say. The key change that's been made as a result of this package is a fundamental structural change to workers' comp. And the intent of it is to make the system faster, simpler and more engaging for insurers, employers and workers. As well as that, we've ticked the boxes on a number of the recommendations that have been made by the various committees. The new State Insurance and Care Governance Act commenced on 1st of September. And essentially what it's done is abolished the WorkCover Authority and created three new entities in New South Wales. There's CIRA, the one that I mentioned before, Insurance and Care, or iCare, as it's known by its shorter name, and SafeWork New South Wales. So SafeWork's the Work Health and Safety Regulator. That's been separated out into a separate standalone business area. It still reports through me, so we've still got synergies and collaboration there, which is good. iCare, is the best way to describe it is that it's essentially the insurance operator or the insurance business that was part of the old WorkCover. And it's been set up to deliver people-centred services to those who were previously served by the nominal insurer, lifetime care and support, dust diseases, and also PsychCorp, which is the state government's self-insurance arrangement. That's being set up as a separate statutory corporation, completely outside of the department. The other thing that's happened there is iCare has a line of responsibility to the Minister for Finance and Services. My division and CIRA has a responsibility to the Minister for Better Regulation and Innovation. So we've taken the theme of structural separation, if you like, right to the cabinet room. So each will be bringing a different perspective to any policy debate. So CIRA sits in my division along with Safe Work, and I've been appointed as the Chief Executive of CIRA. We're overseen by a board of five. That includes myself as Chief Executive, the Secretary of the Department, plus three externals, and I'm hopeful that there will be an announcement around that in the next couple of days. The process of appointing board members has been longer than we'd anticipated. But basically the role of the board is to set the general policies and strategic direction of CIRA. And CIRA will be guided by that board in undertaking the regulatory functions for the three schemes that it looks after. Specifically, it will have the role of licensing and supervising insurance companies and others involved in the insurance system, including iCare, regulating and standardising insurance policies, products and prices, controlling market conduct and preventing unfair practice, monitoring financial solvency of insurance operators, regulating other aspects of the system, such as legal costs and medical costs, and providing funding, education and grants to deliver better outcomes. It also has part of the dispute resolution function within the New South Wales system. We have a multi-layered, multi-tiered, multifaceted dispute resolution arrangement where we've got WIRO, the WorkCover Independent Review Office, we've got the Workers' Comp Commission, we've got the Supreme Court, and I think we've got the District Court in there, as well as CIRA. It also has a role in dispute resolution. That's obviously something that's not sustainable, and we're going to have a look at that in the future. So really the key objective of CIRA is to ensure the sustainability of the insurance schemes that it regulates. And one of the key activities will be promoting effective prudential management of the state insurance schemes. To that end, we have specific powers to collect and analyse information and encourage and promote sound prudential practices and evaluate the effectiveness of the various systems to ensure the schemes are financially sustainable. We have a specific power in relation to workers' compensation to develop market practice guidelines and also premium guidelines. And we also have the power to require the insurers, including the nominal insurer, iCare, to submit business plans. We obviously have those guidelines in both the motor accident scheme and also in the home building scheme. But it's fair to say that the sorts of issues that we'll need to cover off in those guidelines are going to be very different for workers' comp to what they are for motor accidents. In terms of premium pricing, we are moving to a system which is essentially replacing what was called the insurance premiums order. That will go, and instead we'll operate a file and write type system, which is what we do for motor accidents. Now, we need to develop the guidelines around that. That is probably going to take some time, but we are working towards having the new system operational by at least the middle of next year. We may need to sort of do a two-step process, an interim type step. So in terms of our regulatory approach and function, we're very conscious of taking you know, a modern approach to the regulatory task that we've been set up to deliver on. For those of you who heard Andrew speak before, the MAA was on a journey of becoming a true risk-based regulator. In the past, I think it had been a very compliance-focused, command and control type regulator. But that's something that we're hoping to emulate across the whole of CIRA. So consistent with sort of, you know, the Malcolm Sparrow view of the world, what we're intending to be is primarily risk-based, efficient and effective. We'll use evidence bases for actions that we take wherever possible. We want to be outcomes focused. We want to be a genuinely engaged regulator as well. I think one of the criticisms that's been levelled at WorkCover in the past was that it was a little bit insular and it wasn't actually out there engaging with the people that it either had to regulate or other participants in the scheme. So we've got a lot of work underway that's going to address that. And then fundamentally what we want to do is become a, you know, a regulator that has the right touch. Now, by that I don't mean a light touch, which, you know, implies sort of a pushover, and we're not going to be the heavy-handed compliance regulator, but it's really important that we get the balance right. We choose the problems that we need to respond to based on evidence, and we'll deal with them appropriately. So that's pretty much it around CIRA. I will come back at the end and just run through some of the other bits of work that we've got underway if I've got time. The other major changes that have happened this year in the scheme are some significant reforms to the benefit structure. There was, for those of you who may recall, in 2012, the whole structure of the benefits system in the workers' comp scheme in New South Wales was overhauled. Essentially, what those reforms aimed to do was to deliver increased benefits for the more seriously injured. I think we aim to get about 70% more benefits to about the 940 of the most seriously injured workers. We introduced caps on weekly benefit entitlements, which is not something we'd had before, and also on medical and related payments. We capped those at 12 months, but then there were increased payments available depending on your level of permanent impairment. And we actually introduced work capacity assessments to look at people's medical and functional state to help inform decisions around sort of whether they would be entitled to future benefits. I was interested to hear South Australia's just actually moved away from that, so I'll probably have to catch up with Greg McCarthy at some point to find out what the logic was there. Those schemes in 2012 were enormously successful. They effectively prevented what was a 28% premium increase that was about to hit, and that obviously had a knock-on benefit for the economy in terms of jobs and so on and so forth. As a result of those reforms, at the end of last year, the workers' compensation scheme, or the nominal insurer scheme, was now fully funded with a surplus of $2.43 billion. That's quite a spectacular turnaround in a very short period of time. The government, in the middle of last year, took some decisions to actually return some of or to make some modifications to the scheme to address some of the perceived harsh impacts of the 2012 reforms. And then as part of the election, which we had in New South Wales earlier this year, they committed to returning the surplus, the surplus that accumulated above sort of the solvency ratio, and splitting that between increases in benefits and lower premiums for workers as well. So in the case of the benefit enhancement, some of the things that happened were some changes to ensure continued access to hearing aids, prosthesis, home and vehicle modifications and related treatment up until retirement age, extended medical benefits for workers with whole person impairment assessed between 21 and 30% so that people would get those until retiring age, some changes to ensure that workers who were injured close to retirement weren't disadvantaged because of the time of their injury. We made some clarifying amendments to make sure that benefits weren't cut off while a work capacity assessment was being undertaken. Then we clarified sort of entitlements to secondary surgery for particular injuries as well. As I mentioned, most of those changes were made last year. This year there were a further package of amendments which by and large adjusted thresholds to increase eligibility for for particular types of benefits. So some of the thresholds were lowered from 30 to 21% so that you'd become eligible for life. Till retirement age, I shouldn't say that. And again, the philosophy was to try and support those workers with the highest needs. There's also a specific focus on return to work with these changes, and some of the premium reductions that are being returned to employers are going to be tied to improve work return to work performance. Obviously we'll continue to monitor the scheme, over the next couple of years. I think one of the bits of feedback that we've had from a lot of stakeholders is that they'd really like a period of stability. Now, that's not entirely in our control. We accept that, but certainly I think that will be one of the key objectives in the regulatory system that we try and operate as CIRA. A couple of other things that I just briefly wanted to mention that we've got underway. Consistent with that principle of engagement and consultation, we've just recently released a discussion paper on the legal costs, the regulation of legal costs for work capacity review decisions. One of the changes that was made in 2012 was that there was to be no entitlement to legal costs in those particular circumstances. The 2015 reforms have undone that, but we need to put a regulatory framework around that cost, around those costs. So we're in the process of consulting with people through an issues paper at the moment. We've also, in the last about 3 weeks ago, the government announced that it would also deal with a particular issue of unfairness around people that were injured pre-2012 who'd had a permanent impairment assessment before those changes came into effect. Effectively, they were stopped from getting a second permanent impairment assessment if their condition deteriorated after 2012. So we're in the process of making a minor change to address that and respond to that particular court decision, which is perceived to have had an adverse impact. We're shortly going to be kicking off a review of our self-insurer licensing framework. We've already been engaging with the self-insurers in the industry and also with iCare to get some initial views about how the self-insurer policies are working. One of the key issues that is under consideration is the compliance burden or the compliance impact of our current licensing policy, which I think was last reviewed in something like 2001. There's some very specific concerns about the requirement to get work health and safety audits undertaken, and there's a debate about whether that's fair. Why are we penalising people who are self-insurers? Why are we putting them to a higher standard than other ordinary employers? So we're working that through at the moment, and we expect a discussion paper will be released on that very, very soon. How much longer? Used it all up. That's lucky because I've finished. it's an exciting challenge that I've been given, and it's been an incredibly bumpy 3 months for the first 3 months, but we're getting there, and hopefully you'll start to see a lot more about our style and our regulatory approach emerging through discussion papers and other things like that. So thank you.
Thanks very much, Anthony. And if it's okay with you, we'll leave questions till the end so people can ask questions of both speakers at the end. So our second speaker is Sarum Tawia. So Sarum is the Director of Scheme Policy at Comcare, and it's a position that he's had since July 2013. Sarum has extensive experience in the workers' compensation industry. He joined Comcare in 2008 and prior to that held various policy, claims management and regulatory roles in both Victoria and New South Wales workers' comp schemes. In his current role, Sarum is responsible for the management of policy-related matters in relation to the operation of the SRC Act, including scheme design, the management of scheme policy issues, liaising with all determining authorities, and input into the management of scheme significant litigation, among other things. Thanks very much, Sarum.
Thanks, Amanda, and good afternoon, everyone. And thanks for having a full house here today. A few familiar faces. What I would want to do is just take you through a couple of... I just want to quickly go through a couple of issues. I will be touching on three key issues in my presentation. First of all, I'll give you some data in terms of scheme trends and how we're progressing in terms of our performance. I'll touch quickly on some of the self-insurance arrangements and what the latest issues are for us. And last but not the least, I'll talk in a bit of detail about the proposed legislative changes that are currently before Parliament and just give you an insight into what they're about and what next, where we are and where we're going from here. I must say that it's an exciting time at Comcare. We've recently had a new CEO, Jennifer Taylor, and Jennifer is leading a program of change to lead Comcare to become the best, the leading insurer, a national regulator, and to provide service excellence in what we do. But before I do that, I thought I'll just give you a very quick summary, snapshot of what the scheme is actually about. Who does it cover? What are we talking about? And that slide tries to explain it. Now, a lot of you might be looking at that and going, what the? Doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, we're talking about two different pieces of legislation. There is the SRC Act, which covers workers' comp arrangements, and then there's the WHS Act that covers work health and safety arrangements. And as you can see, it's not the same people who are covered under both. And there are overlapping areas, and I'll try to explain that in a little while. But before I do that, I just thought I'll give you some quick stats about who the numbers of people who are covered under our scheme. And it's fair to say that the Comcare scheme is a very, very small scheme compared to states and territories. The difference is that we cover a very large geographical span across the whole of Australia, and in some cases actually extraterritorial coverage because of our foreign embassies and things like that, which presents a challenge in itself, which I won't go into much detail today. In terms of the number of employers that are covered under the workers' comp scheme, there are 224 employers that are covered, made up of 191 Australian government and ACT government employers and 33 self-insured licensees. When it comes to employees, as of the 30th of June this year, there are approximately 375,500, roughly, FTE employees who are covered under the workers' comp scheme. In the WHS area, there are roughly 415,000 FTE covered under the work health and safety arrangements. Now, the question I'm sure most of you are asking yourselves is why the difference? And I'll try to explain hopefully in simple terms. There are employers who are covered under the workers' comp scheme that are not covered under the work health and safety arrangements and vice versa. And I'll use a couple of examples to illustrate what the coverage arrangements are like. So to give you an example, the SRC Act covers Australian government, ACT government, and all the licensees, self-insured licensees in the workers' comp scheme, but it doesn't cover Australian Defence Force personnel, the military side of the government, which has its own workers' comp arrangements called the Military Rehabilitation and Compensation Scheme. Whereas when you go to the WHS side, the Defence Force is covered by the WHS arrangements, but the ACT government is not covered by the workers' comp, the WHS arrangements. Therein lies the complexity of what you see up there. And yes, it does take a while to actually understand it in detail. But trust me, I am right about that, and I know what I'm doing. Okay, so what I want to do now is just give you a quick snapshot of some statistics in terms of what our performance is like. And I've taken some of the information from this Safe Work Australia comparison report. What you actually see there is an older version of the report. I've got a new one here. Unfortunately, we didn't manage to catch it before the slides were put together. But what I'm going to say still makes sense because the trends are showing the same thing. So it doesn't really reflect anything new in terms of what the report is saying. This first slide talks about the incident rate for serious injury and disease claims. Comcare's data is the third block of bars on the right of the slide. And as you can see, it's got one of the lowest if not the lowest, incidences of serious injuries and disease claims across all states and territories and New Zealand. So in that sense, it's a fairly positive report for ComCare and one that we are actively working to make sure that it continues. The good thing is we think the trend is coming down, which it's improving, and our challenge is to make sure that we maintain it that way and ensure that the it doesn't go the other way. Looking at another slide, which now looks at the number of claims per serious injury, which is defined as 5 days or more compensation, and this is a standard definition used by Safe Work Australia in terms of performance. What we've seen is that since 2010-11, there has been a decrease of approximately 37% in the incidence of claims accepted both across this, the scheme. In 2014-15, the scheme accepted 14.9 claims per 1,000 FTEs, and this compares with 2013-14 when we're accepting 17.4 claims per 1,000 FTEs. So clearly an improvement in terms of the trends that we can see, and that's clearly demonstrated in the graph there. Now, the issue for us is that we have a big issue relating to psychological injury claims. When you are, even though we are seeing a decreasing trend in the serious injury claims, we are still seeing a number of psychological injury claims, especially in relation to the premium paying sector, which is the public sector, Australian government, ACT government. Now, just to give you some stats, psychological injury claims account for 15% of all claims that we receive, and that's compared to licensees. Licensees have 2% of claims that are psychological injury claims. But for the premium paying scheme, even though it's only 15%, they account for 38% of our costs. And the average claims cost for per each claim is roughly $288,000. So some significant amounts that we're dealing with here, and that is one of our biggest challenges that we are facing in this regard. And quickly, return to work rates, again from the Safe Work Australia comparison report. And the ComCare figures are the first one on the right, on the left, sorry, beg your pardon. And as again, you can see good performance overall. In fact, one can say the best performing scheme in terms of return to work rates. I guess the issue for us is, and I'm sure you can all see the deterioration in the return to work rates. And as we, expand and grow, we think that is an issue that will become more and more important for us to manage. And it's something that we're very, very conscious of. So ComCare recognizes the importance of focusing on rehabilitation and return to work. Under the ComCare legislation, the responsibility for rehab is solely for the employer, and they manage the rehabilitation process. And perhaps ComCare has been a bit passive in, how it interacts with that rehabilitation process. What we are doing now is to take a more active role, even though we haven't got the primary responsibility. We think we have a significant role to play in terms of facilitating employer and employee engagement in the rehabilitation and return to work process. So some of you here from the state schemes will probably say, duh, we've been doing it, but it's something that is one thing that ComCare is beginning to look at more actively and be more proactive in targeting specific types of interventions that needs to be undertaken. And the challenge for us is because there's such a high return to work rate, we need to be able to identify those ones that we should be intervening in. As most people know, the vast majority of injured workers will go back to work whether we intervene or not. And our challenge is to actually get involved in the ones that will not go back to work or speed up the return to work for those who are delaying the return to work process. So that is a big challenge for us, and we are continuing to work on that. An active part of that is to actually improve on our claims processing and dispute management processes to take away the focus of the injured employee and the employer from those sort of minor, if you like, issues and focus on the return to work and rehabilitation process. So if we can speed up claims processing and make payments quickly and actually determine claims quicker, I think the better it will be for us to, you know, focus on return to work. And similarly, if we can actually make better decisions to reduce the number of disputes, I think there was it was mentioned at the plenary session this morning, it's amazing how people focus on the small things rather than the big issues. And if we can eliminate those sorts of issues, we think we'll actually get a better outcome at the end of the day in terms of the return to work process. By focusing on the return to work and rehabilitation of injured workers, and Comcare is aiming to lower average premiums to approximately 1.1% of payroll, excluding GST, and to reduce the insured scheme liability by approximately $1 billion by 2018. Pretty ambitious task, but we think that's something that we need to be working towards to actually achieve this objectives we set ourselves. So I just want to quickly talk about one of those initiatives that we are working on at the moment, which focuses on trying to engage the broader community in terms of rehabilitation and return to work. And Comcare is a signatory to the Royal College of Physicians consensus statement, realizing the health benefits of work. And that recognizes that work is generally good for health and well-being. We hear that again today at the plenary session. Nothing new. But what we want to do is to try and focus attention by engaging with our stakeholders on a more proactive basis to ensure that we can actually get them to work with us in that space. So we have set up a program called the Health Benefits of Work, a program which is runs from last year to next year. And the main focus is to work with MGPs to provide information and support that helps the injured and ill worker to return to work. Part of that process is that Comcare has engaged Professor Nikki Ellis. I'm sure some of you here would know Nikki. That's a photo there. And Nikki has been an expert in this industry for quite a long, long while, and she is leading this discussion that we're having with GPs and the broader community about the health benefits of work and staying at work wherever possible. Another part of that initiative is for us is that Comcare has developed in consultation with a number of stakeholders a single medical certificate of capacity, and that we have implemented in the ACT area and surrounding regions to try and focus on what an injured worker is able to do rather than the incapacity certificates that we normally get. And I do know that some other states and territories have similar things within your various schemes. That certificate, as I said, is now available and is being used by a number of GPs in the ACT and the surrounding regions, and we will be working with them to evaluate that sometime next year to assess how effective it is and how we can probably look at using that a bit more broadly if possible. So, 2 minutes. Can I skip that then?
Sure.
Can I very quickly talk about self-insurance? So there was a moratorium that was placed on employees joining the scheme by the previous Labour government. That has now been lifted. It was lifted in 2013 by the previous minister, Minister Abetz. And as a result of that, we are experiencing more interest by some employers in joining the scheme. I'll just give you some very quick figures. Since 2013, we've had 44 inquiries from employers wanting to join the scheme. Six of those have actually been declared eligible by the minister. Five applications have been lodged with the Safety, Rehabilitation and Compensation Commission. Four licenses have been granted by the commission. And the one is still being considered at the moment. The Commission is also looking at its regulatory framework to try and improve on how it regulates self-insurers generally and reduce red tape. So that's another initiative that is currently underway. Now, I'm quite happy to answer some questions about the legislative changes in the question time. So very, very quickly, there are three bills before the House at the moment. The first bill is all about expanding access to the Comcare scheme by enabling employers, private employers to apply to join the Comcare scheme. The test is being changed from competition test to a national employer test, if the bill passes, and I'll come to that in a sec. The next bill is the legislative change bill, which is all about the benefit structures, rehabilitation, payment and impairments. Unlike the other states and territories, and you know, we've heard presentations already about schemes have going through, you know, reviews, Comcare has never actually had a major review since it came into effect in 1988, unlike all other state schemes. So this is probably our first attempt to try and do that. And a few challenges in Parliament, but it's still currently before Parliament. And the last bill I won't really go into is really all about trying to protect the premium paying scheme if a premium payer decides to leave the Comcare scheme and completely exit the scheme. Now, it won't affect any of you here. That's only for the Australian government and its agencies. So that's really not something that I think you need worry yourselves about. So quickly, what are the bills? As I said, they're currently before Parliament. Whether they pass or not is not an issue for us in Comcare, because that's part of the parliamentary system. What we are doing, though, is actually taking active steps to develop policies, procedures, guidelines, whatever else is required in anticipation of these bills passing so that we can be ready for implementation. And there is endeth my lesson. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sarah and Anthony. So we've got time for a couple of questions before we get kicked out of the room. Who would like to lead the way?
Just fill up the bed.
All right, well, I might start one with one of my own. Question for Anthony, perhaps. Have you had much feedback from injured workers about the impact of the changes within the New South Wales environment? And how it's impacted on them.
So a number of the reviews that I've mentioned provided a point where a lot of feedback was received around where there were particular issues emerging. And then equally with the latest round of benefits reforms that were done in 2015, there was sort of extensive consultation with main stakeholders, including sort of unions, legal representative bodies and all of that sort of stuff. So we got a lot of feedback around where particular issues were, and some of the changes that were made last year and also this year were actually designed to address some of the impacts of the 2012 reform. So I think we've actually developed some quite good feedback loops around that. It's not to say we've addressed everything. We know there's still some other issues out there that people are concerned about, but, you know, you've always got to get the balance right.
So would you mind just speaking in front of the mic, grabbing the microphone? Thank you.
Yeah, following on from that, and really a question for Sarah, with the bills currently before Parliament, do you anticipate that that will potentially cut some of the benefit entitlements for injured workers within your scheme?
I wouldn't use the word cut, but definitely there will be changes to the benefit structures under the Comcare scheme if the bill passes. So things like step downs, we only have one step down at 45 weeks, and you know, there's a lot of debate about the merits of that or not in terms of encouraging return to work. So there will be different, you know, step-down arrangements if the bill passes. And there will be different eligibility criteria to manage, you know, psychological injury claims and things like that. So, yes, there will be changes. Whether there are cuts or not is political comments, which I won't get into.
Am I allowed to ask a follow-up question really, really
quickly? I might just let someone else have a chance first, if that's all right. And then if there's a time, welcome to jump back on again.
Andrew Holter from Taylor Fry. It's a question for Anthony. It's a sort of shade of grey question, different to the question that came from Amanda. I was just wondering where a claimant under the 2012 changes has now lost their entitlement to income replacement and then later on gone and lost their entitlement to medical benefit entitlements. Has there been any research undertaken to see how injured workers who follow that path actually fare without the without the assistance of the workers' compensation scheme. So I guess I'm talking about active research as opposed to feedback.
Not that I'm aware of at this point. I mean, we will continue to monitor the scheme, and if there's particular issues that people think we should look at, we're happy to consider that. But as far as I'm aware, there's no specific research underway into that at the moment. We continue to monitor the scheme generally.
I'm sorry to have to cut question time short. Please feel free to follow up with the speakers afterwards. So please thank Anthony and Sarum for their presentations.